We're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 9, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Returns Home. Text number 64. Translation. There were emerald staircases which led to lakes full of variously colored lotus flowers and lilies, and swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes, and similar other valuable birds were visible in those lakes. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It appears that not only was the palace surrounded by compounds and gardens with varieties of trees, but there were small man-made lakes also, where the water was full of many colored lotus flowers and lilies. And to get down to the lakes, there were staircases made of valuable jewels, such as emeralds. By the beautifully positioned garden houses, there were many luxuriant birds, such as swans, chakravakas, karandavas, and cranes. These birds generally do not live in filthy places like crows do. The atmosphere of the city was very healthy and beautiful. It can simply be imagined from its description. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unilitanyena. That's my Sri Gurave Namah. Translation again. There were emerald staircases which led to lakes full of variously colored lotus flowers and lilies, and swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes, and similar other valuable birds were visible in those lakes. We're hearing about the descriptions of Dhruva Maharaj's father, namely Maharaj Uttanapat. We're hearing descriptions of his palace, his residential quarters, where Dhruva Maharaj had returned to live. So, Dhruva Maharaj's father was a very powerful man. He was an emperor. So, he was not living in a simple dwelling place, but he had residential palace. And when you have opulent, when you have nice residential quarters, along with it, there will be also some gardens. Yesterday we heard descriptions about some of the trees, the types of trees which were there in the garden of Maharaj Uttanapat. And we heard that there was trees like Parijata, which had come from heaven. Today, we're hearing that as well as the trees, there are also very special types of birds, which are attracted to peaceful, clean places. Not birds like the crows. You know, when you go to a big city, especially like Calcutta, you see a lot of crows everywhere. Common sight. Different places you see different types of birds. When I was in Jaipur last week, I saw a lot of pigeons. Pigeons, the people were even feeding the pigeons. So the pigeons were growing in huge numbers, a lot of them. And in Dwarka, I saw there was a lot of seagulls. And the people were feeding the birds there also. So they were growing in vast numbers too. You would expect seagulls by the sea. Here we read about the type of birds at Maharaj Uttanapada's palace. Swans, cranes, chakravakas, geese, So, these birds are, the swan especially, they like to be in the clear place where the water is clear and where there are lotus flowers. They don't go to the dirty places like crows. Crows are always in the garbage. Filthy sewer water can be there. The crow won't mind. But the swan, he likes nice, clear water where there is lotus flowers. They play with these flowers. So Prabhupada points out that this is a description of a city. And it's surprising to hear that a city, and where do we find any city today where there are swans? You know, lakes with swans and these kind of birds. You don't find this nowadays. Such animals, they won't be found in a city. Because whenever we think of a city, we think about filthy environment. This must be very polluted. It must be very dirty. There will be, you know, nothing very sanctified in a city. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're hearing about Maharaj Uttanapad and his quarters, and he's living in a city. But in the city, it's a very peaceful and sanctified atmosphere. Now we're in Kali Yuga. Dhruva Maharaj was living in the Satya Yuga. So this is the difference. Kali Yuga means the age of iron. We've based everything around factories and technology. But in the Satya Yuga, people also lived in cities. There's nothing wrong with living in a city, provided you can keep a nice atmosphere, a nice environment. We want to create a natural environment. But in the Kali Yuga, we don't find that. The Kali Yuga, even you make a nice park, and put some trees there, you bring some trees, and you try to bring some birds there, put some lotus flowers in, there'll be an aeroplane flying over with a cracking sound, yeah. And there will be the noise of the traffic. There will be the pollution. There will be so many other problems. So even though you try to create some environment, nice environment within the city, it's difficult to make it really happen. So this is Kali Yuga. This is the nature of this Kali Yuga, that everything is polluted. Nobody is able to enjoy the nice natural atmosphere. But Dhruva Maharaj and his father, they are living very nicely. They have nice home, nice atmosphere. Birds, these nice auspicious birds are also attracted there. We will go on to read the next verse, text 65. Uttanapado rajashi prabhavam tanayashyatam shrutva dristavad vibhutatmam prapade vismayam param. Translation. The saintly king Uttanapad, hearing of the glorious deeds of Dhruva Maharaj and personally seeing also how influential and great he was, felt very satisfied. For Dhruva's activities were wonderful to the supreme degree. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Dhruva Maharaj was in the forest executing his austerities, his father Uttanapad heard everything about his very wonderful activities. Although Dhruva Maharaj was the son of a king and was only 5 years old, he went to the forest and executed devotional service under strict austerity. Therefore, his acts were all wonderful. And when he came back home, naturally, because of his spiritual qualifications, he became very popular among the citizens. He must have performed many wonderful activities by the grace of the Lord. No one is more satisfied than the father of a person who is credited with glorious activities. Maharaj Uttanapad was not an ordinary king. He was a Rajarshi, a saintly king. Formerly, this earth was ruled by one saintly king only. Kings were trained to become saintly. Therefore, they had no other concern than the welfare of the citizens. These saintly kings were properly trained, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita also. The science of God, or the yoga system of devotional service, known as Bhagavad Gita, was spoken to the saintly king of the sun planet, and gradually it descended through the Kshatriya kings, who were generated from the sun and the moon. If the head of a government is saintly, certainly the citizens become saintly, and they are very happy because both their spiritual and physical needs and hankerings are satisfied. Translation again, the saintly king Uttanapad, hearing of the glorious deeds of Dhruva Maharaj and personally seeing also how influential and great he was, felt very satisfied, for Dhruva's activities were wonderful to the supreme degree. So we're told about the qualification of Dhruva Maharaj's father, that he was not an ordinary person, he was a Rajarshi, a saintly king. And Prabhupada goes on to explain that the head of the government, the leaders of the country, they should all be saintly persons. They must be of good, pure character. And then they can properly act for the benefit of others. Yad yad acharati shrestas tat tadevi tarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvartate. Lord Krishna explains the principle in Bhagavad Gita. Whatever actions are performed by the shrestha, by the leader of society, by the respected person, then these acts will influence others. By their behavior, by their actions, other people will be inclined to follow. Just like we see in the modern times how advertisements are made. You watch television and you see some famous movie star using some shampoo for her hair, or he's using some razor blade for his face or something, you know. And, you know, we think, oh, he uses this or she uses that, I should also use, right? You know, they use some big name to influence, to attract everyone's attention. We think we should follow the big names. So, this is the principle, actually, of Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna explained this in Bhagavad Gita, that people are influenced by leaders. Who are the Mahajans? We are supposed to follow Mahajans, but in the modern times, Mahajans have become movie stars and cricket players and so on, you know. These are the Kali Yuga Mahajans, you know. And unfortunately, people are following them anyway. But we're actually meant to follow the real Mahajans. You see, we recite every morning the names of the Mahajans. Swayambhur, Narada, Shambhu, Komar, Kapilo, Manu, Pralado, Janako, Bhishmo, Valir, Vyasaki, Vayam. Yamaraj is describing himself the names of the Mahajans. And he is also one. We should follow these Mahajans. The Mahajans who are saintly, who know the scriptures and who teach the scriptures and who follow according to the scriptures. These are the Mahajans. But because people are so blind, they follow other blind people. the blind follow the blind. Andayatandir upaniyamanas tepishi tantriyam uridamni bandha. Prahlad Maharaj has described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that people are so blind that they foolishly follow another blind person. And the result is they simply end up in more difficulty, in greater trouble. A blind person cannot help us. If we are in need of help, and if we're looking for guidance, we have to find somebody who has proper vision, who can properly direct us. So, these saintly kings were given this responsibility. And Lord Krishna described also in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the history of Bhagavad Gita. That imam vivishvatri yogam proktamam aham avyayam vivishvan manave praor manur ikshvakave pravit. Lord Krishna says, in the beginning, previously, I instructed the science of yoga to the sun god, Vivishvan. And Vivishvan instructed to Manu, the father of mankind. Manu gave it to his son, Ikshvaku. Evam parampara praptam imam rajashayo vidu sakalineha mahata yoganasta parantapa. But there was yoganasta. The knowledge was lost. Although this knowledge was given to the saintly kings and it was passed through the disciplic succession, in course of time, the knowledge was lost. Therefore, Lord Krishna had to come again and speak the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. However, the point is made that this knowledge was not just given to any man to distribute, but it was given to the Rajashis, to the saintly kings. If you have something valuable, you don't just give it to anybody, but you give it to some trustworthy person. So Lord Krishna trusted these saintly kings. They were the leaders of society. They were administrating the world. He gave them this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, and he expected that they would teach it and enforce it and distribute it to others. It's unfortunate that in these modern times, in general, politicians around the world are often atheistic, materialistic, demonic people. We often see how one politician after another throughout the world is accused of either corruption or some immorality or degradation in their habits. In the USA, they had, during Prabhupada's time, there was Nixon, President Nixon. He had to resign because it was found out that he had cheated. He'd arranged cheating during the election. So he had to resign. And then recently, there was a case, the Bill Clinton, that he was found out to have be having affairs with other women, which was a common thing. And then they asked other leaders of other countries, what do you think about this? You know, that this Bill Clinton, he's having a relationship with other women. And so many of the other leaders of other countries, they all defended him. They said, yeah, what's wrong with that? Why not? In other words, they also do the same thing themselves. So this is Kali Yuga. Practically throughout the world, the politicians are known to be people you cannot trust. Chanakya Pandit said, never trust politician. Because nature, they have this nature that they're inclined, often give in to sense gratification. So we're hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam of how real leadership should be, how real leaders should be. That actually the system of having a monarch, having a king, was a very successful system in previous ages. We all know the history of Lord Ram, and still today people speak about Ram Raja, having the kingdom of Lord Ram. But unfortunately, there's no Ram, there's no Lord Ramachandra to be the king. That would be the ideal situation. To just simply have a king but without qualification creates the same problems as having politicians. Of course, we know previously in the Kali Yuga, there, not that long ago, there were kings. But because they were all materialistic people, because they were only interested in their own sense gratification, the governments took away their power. They lost everything. However, Srimad Bhagavatam is describing to us perfect arrangements of management, how countries, how the whole planet can be ruled perfectly when there's one qualified person, one saintly person, just like Maharaj Uttanapad, the father of Dhruva Maharaj. Then they can rule the whole world, and the whole world can be peaceful. By their perfect example. Of course, Kali Yuga, we see now that even if people will show a good example, other people will take advantage of them. And they will ridicule them. That, oh, you're the good person. They'll be made a fool of for being honest. They think, why you can't be like everybody else? Why you have to be different? Yeah. People don't appreciate, in the Kali Yuga, people often don't appreciate good qualities. We have to be convinced of these things ourselves. Don't think people will appreciate us just because we display good qualities. We have to be convinced of what is right. We have to understand these things on the basis of scriptural knowledge. So these saintly kings, they were trained from their very birth. Just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can hear about the birth of Emperor Parikshit. When Maharaj Parikshit was born, Parikshit was the grandson of Arjun, the son of Bhimanu. And when he was born, then Maharaj Yudhisthira, they were his seniors, they were all anxious to know, what is the nature of this child? How will he be qualified to become the emperor? From their very birth, they are trained that they can rule, that they can govern, and that they can be saintly, and they can show the perfect example for others. Not a small thing to take such a position, to be a Rajarshi. It is a very rare thing that you can get such person. In the Kali Yuga, we know people are not so much qualified. Prabhupada did try to preach to the politicians. He did try to meet with Indira Gandhi. He had proposals to her. He was suggesting that everybody in the government, they should all be twice initiated Brahmins who strictly follow the four regulative principles. Like this. So Prabhupada had his vision of how he could implement Krishna consciousness even in this Kali Yuga. Although this is Kali Yuga, there is some way that we can change the Kali Yuga. Prabhupada explains, just like if you know it's going to rain, you take an umbrella with you. You protect yourself. You're ready for the rain. So similarly, in the Kali Yuga, we know that Kali Yuga is a bad time, an ocean of faults. So we have to protect ourselves. We have to be prepared to protect ourselves from the influence of this Kali Yuga. And we do that by our adherence to the religious principles, by our study of the scriptures, and by our worship of the deity in association with devotees. These things protect us from the influence and from the degradation of this age of Kali. So we may not, we don't have any Rajarshis on the planet in this age, but still we can become devotees. We can be Vaishnavas. We can become surrendered to the Lord. That is important. That even we're not ruling a country or anything, at least we ourselves can become devotees and display the good qualities. Yashyasti bhaktir bhavakti akinchana sarvair gunais tatra samase suraha. Harava bhaktasya kuto mahadgana mano yatain asati bhavato bahi. That if one is a devotee of the Supreme Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu, if he is a bhakta, then he will display, he should manifest the good qualities, all good qualities. However, if one is not a devotee of the Lord, even though he may be very expert in the yoga system, even though he may be very expert in maintaining his family and other such duties in the material world, but if one is not a devotee, he cannot have any good qualities. He simply remains under the modes of material nature. He may be acting in goodness, but he has not transcended the mode of goodness. And even though one may act in the mode of goodness and sattva gun, but still he can be influenced by rajas and tamas. Because this is the nature of the material energy, that there is always some struggle between the three modes of nature. We're trying to be good, but sometimes we overeat, sometimes we oversleep, sometimes we get angry, sometimes we do something we regret. This is the nature of the modes of nature, that we try to be fixed on the mode of goodness, we're trying to be a good person, but still sometimes, due to the nature of the material energy, we become influenced and we do something we shouldn't. How to overcome that? We have to only, the only hope is to become a devotee, to be situated in Krishna consciousness. Because if one is in Krishna consciousness, then one transcends the modes of material nature. He comes to the Shuddha Sattva platform. He's no longer influenced, can no longer be influenced by passion and ignorance. So this is the desired position. We have to elevate ourselves out of the modes of nature to the transcendental platform. And the process to do this is by Krishna consciousness, simply by keeping ourselves engaged in Krishna conscious activities. Beginning with hearing and chanting. When the hearing and chanting are done properly, then naturally remembrance of the Lord will awaken. So this is the most important element of bhakti yoga, that we have to make an effort to absorb our mind in hearing and chanting. And in this way, we will also, the mind will be able to remember the Lord. So these saintly kings, like Maharaj Uttanapada, they also took advantage of the process of bhakti yoga. They were also engaging themselves in hearing and chanting the glories of Lord Vishnu. They did not neglect these devotional activities. Rajarshi does not mean that now he's a Rajarshi, he doesn't have to hear and chant. All of the saintly kings, they were also devotees. And we would see, you can see when you visit or when we read the scriptures, we hear, when you, if you visit the palaces, we see how they also had their deities, they were worshipping the Lord, they were studying the scriptures. Just like during Lord Chaitanya's time, the king of Utkal, Maharaj Prataparudra, is the king of Utkal, which was such a huge state, much bigger than Orissa is today, came all the way down to Madras, practically. So he was ruling a big kingdom, but every day he would spend hours reading scriptures like Mahabharat and Ramayana, Srimad Bhagavatam. He would engage himself also in worshipping deity. He didn't just come once a year to sweep the chariot, and the rest of the year he forgot about God. No, every day he would engage himself in devotional activities, and he would keep Brahmins in his palace so that he could hear scriptures from them. So this was the business of the Rajarshis. Maharaj Ambarish, also the great devotee king, how he's famous for being expert in all 9 aspects of devotional service. Everything he did was in relation to the Lord and devotional service. So Maharaj Ambarish was such a great king that he could defeat Durvasa Muni. That even Durvasa Muni had to come and fall at his feet and ask to be forgiven. So this is the greatness of the Rajarshis, the saintly kings. Why are they great? Because they're devotees. It's not just being the king. Although the king is the representative of God on this planet. Krishna says in 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that of man, I am the monarch. So the king is the representative of God on the face of the planet. He has the responsibility to represent God. This is a great responsibility. It is not easy to accept such a responsibility. It's a great challenge. One has to be constantly vigilant of oneself. That everything one does, one has to be an example. Because the king is the representative of God. But in the modern times we see practically monarchy is finished. Even though there's still some monarchs in places like England, some European countries, in Thailand they still have a king. But just like in England and in Thailand, both the monarchs, both the rulers are aged, and they know that their children are unqualified. They know their children are not able to take the responsibility. So even though they're in their 80s and would like to give up the throne, they're unable to, because they know their own children are unworthy and will never be able to accept the challenges which such a responsibility brings. So monarchy is finished in Kali Yuga. But we do have these scriptures to hear about the glories of such kings. That they can inspire us, they can show us that there were, in the past, there were such qualified people. And we hope that in the future again, we may again see such rulers come who can be perfect rulers who show the perfect example of devotion and surrender to Krishna and give the highest benefit for all of their citizens. It is a duty of one person to give benefit to another. One should be willing to sacrifice his life, his wealth, his intelligence, and his words for the service of others. That is the highest duty. But practically we see in this age, everyone is selfish. We think all first of our own self. We don't think about how we can benefit others. We're only thinking of what will I get? How will I gain? Very rare someone thinks of others' benefit. But Lord Chaitanya taught that, he said, Brahmanda Brahmite Konya Bhagya, Prithivityachiyat Nagararigram Sarvacharchabrapritha. Now, what is the verse I'm thinking of? Para Opaka. Brahmanda Brahmite Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna. A Bharata Bhumite Haila Manusha Janmajar Janma Sartaka Karikara Para Upaka. Para Upaka. We have to think of Para Upaka, the benefit of others. This verse. Bharata Bhumite Haila Manusha Janmajar. Birth in Bharat is very rare. Very rare. What you have to do? You have to make your life perfect. Make your life perfect and then give that benefit to others. Give benefit to others. Work for the benefit of others. So this is the idea. First we should become Krishna conscious ourselves, and then we should give that Krishna consciousness to others. Para upakar. For the benefit of others. So Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada often said, is a giving process. Prabhupada went to America. The people said, have you come here to get money from us? Prabhupada said, I have come to give. I have not come to take from you. I have come to give you what you have forgotten. God consciousness. Everybody else goes to America to take. Prabhupada came to give. That he was giving the highest thing. It's better to give than to receive. We should give the highest thing, Krishna consciousness. So this is the idea. We have to become Krishna conscious ourselves, chant Hare Krishna, read these books about Krishna, and try to give it to others also. This will be good for us and good for the world. Are there any questions or comments? Everybody's convinced, everybody's ready to preach and give Krishna consciousness to others. Sometimes people say, well, I'm new, I'm not able to preach, I don't know anything. But you don't need to know anything very much. Whatever you know more than others. If you simply know Krishna's God, then you know a lot more than most other people. Yeah, if you know you're not a body, you're a soul, even you just know it theoretically, you haven't realized it, but if you know you're the soul, you're not the body, then you give that to others. You know how to chant Hare Krishna, you give that to people. Teach them how to chant. Give them the beads, show them how to chant, hold the beads and chant the holy name. You can preach, everyone can preach. You don't have to know so much. You take some prasadam, you give them some Krishna prasadam, that is preaching. You invite them to come to the temple, that is also preaching. You don't like to preach too much yourself, you don't like to say too much, you bring them here and somebody else will preach to them. Everyone can preach. Preaching, you can preach just by wearing tilak on your forehead. Put nice tilak on your forehead. Let people see that nice tilak on your forehead. And that is benefiting them. Just by putting tilak on your nice face. The ladies like to decorate their face. Every morning they'll sit and paint the face. They paint tilak on your face. And let everybody see nice tilak. Wherever you go, they just see the tilak. They benefit. That's preaching. Any questions? Yes, Prabhu? Yes, talking about monarchy.
My question is, today we have devotees practically from all fields like engineering, doctor, lawyers, etc. But no one from the political field. It's hardly found that any politician is a devotee. So, I think no devotee can survive in the political class. So. that so?
Well, you should go to them and preach. You should go to these people and preach, right? Why? You know, if we have we have doctors, we have scientists, engineers, we have so many different professional people. Why not also politicians? You also, you know, they may not come every morning, but still you should keep contact with them. You should be acquainted with them. You should be preaching to them. You should be encouraging them. Yeah. Prabhupada went, he met Indira Gandhi. He wanted to meet these people, to preach to them. Take them our book sometimes, you take them some prasadam. When you have a big program, you should invite them to come. You know, they like to come where there's a big crowd. So you have big crowds, you can invite them. We should try to give them association and try to make them Krishna conscious. This is preaching. We go everywhere. We go to everyone. We don't consider who's qualified and who's not qualified. We shouldn't think, oh, these politicians, they're all meat eaters, drunkards. They will not be interested in Krishna consciousness. Yeah, they may eat meat and they may drink, but still they cannot deny the importance of religion. They have to respect the religious institutions. They know that religion is a very important thing in the world, and they cannot neglect it. They cannot deny it. So you should take advantage, take time, go and try to meet some of these people. Find people who are interested. Don't think there's nobody interested. There are devotees there. They're waiting for us to come there and get them. You have to go, meet them. Make contacts with them. You'll be surprised if they're interested. Yes, Prabhu?
Maharaj, you have mentioned we should preach. Means first we should perfect ourselves, perfect our lives and perfect others. So nowadays we see, you know, devotees, some neophyte devotees, or mostly we are neophyte devotees, we behave in such a way by seeing our behavior, people may not accept Krishna consciousness. Just like, you know, in the name of Vedas, many people, they misguided people. So in the same way, if we are not qualified, so then we can't preach. So first we have to qualify ourselves, then we can give it to others. As you have mentioned, we should wear tilak and we should tell others. Since my point is that, you know, first we have to qualify ourselves.
Yes, so you can make yourself perfect. You're in the right place to be perfect. Perfection means devotee of Krishna. Doesn't mean you have to be 100% pure devotee of Krishna and constantly thinking of your rasa with Krishna. But it means you're following perfectly. You're following the principles perfectly. You're doing everything you're supposed to do. You're not doing any nonsense activities. That's perfect. Make yourself perfect like that. That's perfect qualification to give benefit to others. That you know that you understand something of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and you act according to the principles of Krishna consciousness, that is perfect. You're perfectly qualified to guide others. Don't be so humble, be so lack of self-esteem thinking. Often, you know, sometimes people have this lack of self-esteem. Think, well, I'm not perfect, so how I can... No, but what does perfect mean? It means you follow the religious principles, the four regulative principles. You chant Hare Krishna every day. That is perfect. You don't have any bad habits. You've given up all sinful activities. You're engaged in worshipping the Lord. You know, that is perfect. Don't wait till you get four arms, right? Sometimes we're thinking like that. Well, wait till I get four arms. When I got my forearm form, then I'm perfect. I can go and preach. Yeah. You know, you can't be like that. Yeah, you have to be willing to take some responsibility. Prabhupada went to America, you know, he gave new devotees. He told them, go to Australia, open temples. Some other devotees, go to Africa. Somebody else, go to Pakistan. Told somebody else, start a magazine. Want to print a magazine back to Godhead. Devotees, I don't know anything about magazines. Prabhupada says, okay, Krishna will help you. So Krishna gives us intelligence. We have the desire to do some service for Krishna. Take up this mood, willing to take on some responsibility for the service of Krishna. Prabhupada gave so much responsibility to so many young people, just new devotees. They'd only just come to Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gave them so much big responsibility. We didn't know anything. But Prabhupada didn't say, you're not pure devotees, you have to wait till you're perfect, I'm going to train you first. No. Prabhupada, send them out, take this, don't go and do this, go and do that. So, you know, this kind of mood is required. You have to be willing, you know. Can't just only think, well, I'm not perfect yet. You know, I have to get rid of so many anarthas. Yeah, within the mind there will be anarthas, but If we keep ourselves busy in Krishna consciousness, it's the best way to get rid of all of these anarthas. We can uproot all of these anarthas by being fully engaged in Krishna's service. That is the important thing. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu.
I request that I'm not following the visually prescribed systems such as tilak or tulsi, mala, clothing like that. Whatever devotees give with satisfaction, I'm wearing them and following according to my situations. Being outside, I couldn't follow the system. Waking up early morning like that, and without food also, sometimes taking prasad of temples or like that, I'm moving. So that health-wise also, I'm mostly not appropriate to do heavy things. But whatever the energy Prabhupada give in the name of Lord Krishna, I'm following. Is there anything wrong in it, please?
Well, you ask me, is there anything wrong? You say you're following as much as you can. The important thing is to avoid activities, you know, to avoid the sinful activities, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating. These things have to be strictly avoided. And there must also be worship of Krishna, particularly by chanting His holy name. So this is important. As much as possible, you should come and associate with the devotees. Like that, you can progress. You know, you're not doing anything wrong. But how fast you progress depends on how much you practice of the instructions given by Srila Prabhupada. So things like, you know, putting the external symbol, the tilak, the neck beads, these things help us to remember that we're devotees. See? Because without these things, then nobody knows you're a devotee, nobody knows you're practicing Krishna consciousness. So you can do a lot of other things, you know, drinking, you know, maybe even like, may not be alcohol, may simply be tea, coffee, these kind of things. You know, you can go anywhere because, you know, you haven't identified yourself as a devotee. So, the external symbols do help us. And as I say, it's a type of preaching. Why do we want to, why am I speaking about preaching? Because if you preach, you will get more mercy from Krishna. The more we do service for Krishna, the more Krishna reciprocates. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, we should surrender to Him. So, are we surrendering to Him or are we holding back from surrendering to Him? You see, you have to consider what is the obstacles in your life which are stopping you from surrendering fully. Because certain things are important, like, you know, waking up early in the morning. This is something which is very helpful for spiritual advancement. In every spiritual organization, not only in our temple here, but Buddhist or Christian, Muslim, they all wake up early in the morning. So if we say, well, I can't wake up early in the morning, you know, this is unusual. What's the problem? Why? You have to look at that, you know, and you have to think how you can get in the habit of waking up early in the morning and taking advantage of the morning hour for spiritual practice. Morning hours means wake up early and look at the newspaper or turn on the television, see what's on the satellite TV. You know, no, it means you chant the holy name, you study the scriptures, you worship the Lord. Yes, Prabhu?
I want to submit you that in the present circumstances, there are a section of people who have a sort of a artificially developed a tendency to somehow have an allergic reaction to the external means of the worship. I know that it is out of ignorance, but the problem is we should have some devotees who, if they are not able to put the tilak, they should continue, because many times what happens, we want to preach to them about Krishna consciousness, but the moment they see us with mala and tilak and all these things, they don't simply come near to us. They simply go far and far from us. So, I just want to submit it that in the beginning, because they just don't want to come near. So, we must have a group of devotees who have to follow all the principles internally. That is, all the regulating principles, basic regulating principles, as much as they can do in their life, they have to follow. And they must chant constantly. They may not have mala with them, but they must chant the name of Krishna. And then they should also preach. Because it is my personal experience that when I was putting a tilak, most of the educated Hindus, I am not talking of the others, and they try to just go away. So I am finding it little bit more useful without tilak, because I am able to associate with them, and then in a minute way and a subtle way I am able to tell them about how to come to temple. You see, you can come without tilak also. You just listen what they say. So this is what I want to submit to you.
Well, sometimes, you know, it's our own mind thinking like that. It's not always so. You know, that in our mind we think that because I've got tilak, they're not coming near me. But when you put the tilak on, they don't come near you. And often when you don't have the tilak, they still don't come near you. Huh? Yeah. But you can go to them with tilak, with or without tilak, you see. But if you go with tilak, I'm saying that sometimes there is some potency there. You've got some special potency. That tilak is like a shield, you see. It's like a kavacha. It's purifying for them to see that also. But I know sometimes, because I go to China, and in China we don't put tilak, right? We don't wear this dress and like that. We go in ordinary dress. So, you know, I'm always so glad when I can come back to a place where I can put tilak. Yeah. After going around China all the time without tilak, it's such a relief to come back and I can put the dress of the devotee again and be a devotee. So I'm telling you my own experience. And, you know, I tried it sometimes. You know, we go for book distribution in devotee dress, and then we go for book distribution in plain clothes without tilak. You don't find any difference practically. It's just the same. You know, sometimes people even they recognize you, oh, you're a Hare Krishna, even without the dress, you know. They can tell you're a Hare Krishna. So, for the devotee's own own purification, it helps to put the tilak and the neck beads and these things. Not only in India, but countries outside of India, devotees are doing these things. They're wearing nice tilak and putting devotee dress. This is how people can recognize the Hare Krishna devotees. They can understand this person is a devotee of Krishna, and they can feel confident to get instruction from them. You don't put the tilak. They say, why don't you put the tilak? Why haven't you got the tilak on? Why haven't you cut your hair? Where is your sikha? You know, if you're a Hare Krishna. Sometimes a question like this, why you don't have the dress? Anyway, I mean, there will always be some people who don't, you know, who are not going to. We don't have to worry. The thing is, we need more people who put the tilak. There's always a lot of people without tilak. We need to have some people with it. That is the idea. The more we have people with the tilak, the better it will be. Okay, so we will stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. God Brahmananda.